For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Natalie Powell. Russia is blaming rebel forces in Syria for a suspected chemical attack that killed more than 70 people. Moscow claims the poisonous gas was leaked after a government airstrike hit a rebel warehouse. Meanwhile, Britain, the US and France are leading efforts at the United Nations to condemn the Syrian government for the attack. Our US correspondent Simon Marks reports.
The action over Syria now moves to the UN, where Britain, France and the US have drawn up a resolution demanding a full investigation into the attack and calling on the Syrian government to unmask the Air Force and helicopter commanders believed responsible for it. Russia is expected to argue that President Bashar al-Assad should not be blamed for Tuesday's assault. And not for the first time at the UN, the Kremlin is poised to veto any attempt to hold him accountable.
Britain's ambassador to the UN, meanwhile, Matthew Rycroft, urged the Russians to back a draft resolution that calls on the Syrian government to unmask those responsible for perpetrating the chemical attack.
It's time now for you to stop blocking and start helping by joining Security Council consensus. Our draft resolution condemns this attack and calls for consequences. All 15 Security Council members should be able to condemn this and every use of chemical weapons.
North Korea has fired a medium-ranged ballistic missile into the Sea of Japan, according to US military officials. The launch comes on the eve of a visit by China's president to the US to meet with Donald Trump, where North Korea's nuclear program is top of the agenda. Harry Horton reports from Washington.
The US military said the missile was launched from a land-based facility near Sinpo in North Korea. South Korean officials say the missile flew about 40 miles before landing in the sea. North Korea is banned from any missile or nuclear tests by the UN, but a series of launches have left neighboring countries increasingly alarmed. In response to the latest launch, the US Secretary of State Rex Tillerson issued a short and pointed statement. The United States has spoken enough about North Korea. We have no further comment.
Russian authorities have arrested six people who are suspected of recruiting for the so-called Islamic State. It comes after an attack on the St. Petersburg metro this week. However, there has been no evidence that these arrests are in connection with the bombing in St. Petersburg, which killed 14 people. Iceland is set to vote on a law that would force companies to prove they are offering equal pay to employees. Its aim is to reduce the pay gender gap between men and women, which is estimated to be at 17% in Iceland, though that's one of the lowest pay gaps in the world, according to recent reports. If the bill is made into law, it would become a world first and could see companies face fines and penalties if they don't adhere to it. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
And thank you very much, Natalie, and a warm welcome to the programme to you. I hope you're well. Is it Wednesday? It is Wednesday already. It is the 5th of April 2017. My name is Richie Allen. Hope you've had a good day. Got a really interesting programme lined up for you this Wednesday. Tweet at Richie Allen Show, and as usual, you can email richie@richieallen.co.uk to tell me what you're thinking about the subjects discussed on today's programme.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England, this is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
You're very welcome, as I already said. Now, coming up this hour, the former MP and the former Respect Party leader, George Galloway, joins me live. He's campaigning in my neighbourhood. I mentioned this a bit earlier today on social media. George is a candidate in the forthcoming by-election in Gorton. We'll be chatting about what he hopes to achieve here, but also about the Syrian situation, the chemical weapons allegations, Labour's suspension of Ken Livingstone, and maybe a bit of Brexit as well. George Galloway. George was very close friends with Sir Gerald Kaufman, who was my MP, where I'm based in Manchester. Sir Gerald Kaufman passed away in February. That's why there's a by-election. And we'll be chatting to George Galloway this hour. Now, in the second hour, excited about this, Garrod O'Colmon put me in touch with Professor Tony Hall. Now, you'll probably know that last October, Tony was suspended from his tenured position at the University of Lethbridge after he was accused of violating Canada's Human Rights Act. Now, Tony was accused of using a YouTube channel to promote hatred of Jews. His suspension was widely condemned by teachers, by academics, by lecturers across Canada. What's happened since then? Well, we'll find out. Professor Tony Hall joins me in the second hour. We're broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester. Of course, on davidicke.com. Bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. Much of what I discuss on this programme is covered in depth on davidicke.com. We're on alternate current radio and we're on TuneIn Radio as well as my own website. Bookmark all of those and thanks for tuning in. It's always good to know you're there. And you can tweet me, as I said, at any time on @RichieAllenShow. Well, the UN Security Council convened today about the alleged chemical weapons attack in Syria, which we were told yesterday killed upwards of 50 people. Matthew Roycroft is the UK ambassador to the United Nations. He told the Security Council that Bashar al-Assad had humiliated Russia by making a mockery of the peace process it had brokered with some rebel groups. This is Sky News with the story. This is their version shortly after 5 p.m. today.
Good afternoon. The UK and the US have hit out at Russia for failing to back a UN resolution condemning yesterday's chemical weapons attack in Syria. More than 70 people were killed, many of them children, when a toxic agent thought to be sarin was released in Idlib. There has been widespread condemnation of the attack, which Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson blamed on the Syrian regime. The UK's ambassador to the UN said Russia has been used by Assad.
This doesn't look like the work of terrorists. This doesn't look like the work of the opposition. This bears all the hallmarks of the Assad regime, and the use of chemical weapons is a war crime. Make no mistake, this regime seems intent on making a mockery of the Russian-backed ceasefire. Russia deployed the full weight of its armed forces to help him. They reduced Aleppo to ruins and displaced hundreds of thousands of men, women and children, all in the name of fighting terrorism. And what does Russia get as repayment? Assad humiliates Russia in the eyes of the world by intensifying his attacks, by reducing the Astana ceasefire to rubble. Assad humiliates Russia by showing just how empty Syria's promise was to remove all its chemical weapons.
The British ambassador to the United Nations Security Council, Matthew Roycroft, there. Now you're going to hear from the US ambassador, Nikki Haley, and the Russian ambassador, Vladimir Safronkov. And in the middle of those two speakers, you're going to hear some wonderful acting from Sky News presenter Kay Burley. Have a listen.
Foaming at the mouth, suffering convulsions, being carried in the arms of desperate parents. We saw rows of lifeless bodies, some still in diapers, some with visible scars of a chemical weapons attack. Look at those pictures. We cannot close our eyes to those pictures.
We also heard from the Russian representative to the United Nations speaking before we heard from Nikki Haley, but after we'd heard from the UK representative, he was less than complimentary about the UK's role in Syria.
The Russian Federation has always had a clear and unequivocal position. The use of chemical weapons by anyone is absolutely unacceptable under any circumstances. Those guilty of these kinds of crimes must be held accountable. The problem of chemical terrorism remains. And if 2 years ago, if the Russian and Chinese initiative was taken seriously, including a draft resolution that we wanted to submit. Today, the situation would be radically different, but you disregarded this initiative.
If you looked at the entire news media, the entire corporate news media, as a large animal, like a cow or a moose or something like that, Sky News is the arse of it. It is the pits of modern journalism. They chose that clip of the Russian ambassador to run all afternoon, but they deliberately left out the audio where he says the UK is obsessed with overthrowing President Assad instead of seeking an end to the violence. He also went on to say Russia could veto any UN Security Council resolution, and he said much of the video evidence of the attack provided by the heroic white helmets was staged, but Sky and the BBC have left that out. So when they're running audio and visual pieces today and tonight, they're not including where he accuses the UK of obsession with getting rid of Assad and his accusations about the video footage being staged. Wonder why they would do that. Then the delivery of Kay Burley, I mentioned this earlier on, dripping with pathos, a masterful performance, driving into your soul the horror, the humanity. The horror and the humanity. Listen to Kay. She's almost in tears.
Well, as the international powers debate how to respond to the latest chemical assault, the suffering of the Syrian people continues. A short time ago, I spoke to lung doctor Abdul Hay Tanari in Idlib, who's been treating patients affected by the attack.
The suffering continues, and he's been treating the patients of the attack.
You know, I was thinking today, my favourite film of all time is Network. What a visionary the director Sidney Lumet was when he made Network, because Kay Burley is the living embodiment of the character played by Faye Dunaway, the character Diana. They knew what was coming down the line with the media when they made that film. You'll remember, those of you old enough to have seen it, William Holden's speech to Diana, played by Faye Dunaway. Listen to William Holden here, and as you're listening to it, form an image of Kay Burley in your mind. Or Megyn Kelly, her sister, used to be on Fox News. They're all the same. Listen to this.
You're television incarnate, Diana. Indifferent to suffering. Insensitive to joy. All of life is reduced to the common rubble of banality. War, murder, death. All the same to you as bottles of beer. And the daily business of life is a corrupt comedy. You even shatter the sensations of time and space into split seconds and instant replays. You're madness, Diana. Virulent madness. And everything you touch dies with you. But not me.
But not me, said William Holden. You are madness, Diana. Television incarnate. Everything is reduced to the common rubble of banality. War, murder, death are all the same to you as bottles of beer. The business of life reduced to a comedy. That sums up 24-hour rolling news soap operas. And that pathos injected into the delivery by your news anchors. Not a question being asked like, why would President Bashar al-Assad, why would he order the deployment of chemical weapons against people? What could he possibly have to gain? Even if he was the most ruthless, evil, maniacal dictator who ever lived, and he isn't, he wouldn't deploy chemical weapons because there is nothing to gain in it. Nothing. And you know, the BBC and Sky continue today to reference Rami Abdulrahman, mentioned so many times on this programme, the Syrian Observatory of Human Rights, based in Coventry, selling T-shirts, getting his images and audio clips from the White Helmets, owned lock, stock and barrel by companies associated with George Soros, a organisation that wants a no-fly zone over Syria. World is mad. Let's move on. Let's move on. The Labour Party suspended Ken Livingstone from holding office for another year over comments he made about Adolf Hitler and Zionism. You know this. We learned this late yesterday. The disciplinary panel upheld three charges of breaching party rules. He has been suspended since April of last year. He claimed Hitler had supported Zionism in the 30s. Some Labour MPs and Jewish groups have criticised the decision not to get rid of him completely. But he said and continues to claim that he'd been suspended for stating the truth. That was yesterday. Now today, the Labour Party, in the guise of the leader Jeremy Corbyn, has said that since being suspended last night, Livingstone continued to make offensive remarks, which might lead to further disciplinary action. Before we hear from Corbyn, here's Labour's deputy leader, Tom Watson, speaking with Sky News a short time ago.
It's caused great offence to Jews up and down Britain and those people that have been fighting anti-racism as part of their civil and political lives. And the great sadness for me, it seems to me that Ken Livingstone is drunk on his own infamy. He's caused more offence to the Jewish community in Britain in the way that he's dealt with the allegations made against him. He's not showed any contrition, he's not apologised, and we now find ourselves in another row about anti-Semitism. It's not fair on our members who are out campaigning on the doorstep, and it's not fair on those people who are fighting racism in Britain.
I'm sure George Galloway will have a lot to say about the comments made by Tom Watson there. I said I'd play you a clip of Jeremy Corbyn. This is really, really poor in terms of audio quality because he was at, I think he was at a creche or he was at an event where a lot of children were around, God love them, and as children are wont to do, they make noise. So I think you'll be able to pick out what he's saying. This is Corbyn.
The National Constitutional Committee made its decision on the basis of remarks he made more than a year ago, and they have suspended him for 2 years, which means there's another 13 months of that suspension to run. There are subsequent remarks that he made have now been referred to the National Executive anyway, and they will be there. But let's be very clear, there's absolutely no place for anti-Semitism whatsoever in our party or our society. There's no place for racism of any sort.
He doesn't send out a message of zero tolerance, though. He's been suspended, not expelled.
The National Constitutional Committee is independent of me, independent of the National Executive. It's set up there to run the party's rules. I've had no contact with them whatsoever. I've put no pressure on them whatsoever.
Okay, but do you agree?
Jeremy Corbyn, I'm just going to remind you, because it's worth reminding you, that the Havara Agreement, which Ken Livingstone was referring to, was an agreement between the Nazis and Zionist Jews in Germany, which was signed in August 1933. There was months of talks leading up to this agreement, talks between the Zionist Federation of Germany, the Anglo-Palestine Bank, and the economic authorities of Nazi Germany. Basically, the agreement was brought about to help emigrate large numbers of Jews to Palestine. That's what it was. The Jews were to emigrate. They were going to temporarily give up their possessions before leaving and later reclaim them by transferring them to Palestine as German export goods. The agreement was criticised by a lot of people at the time, it must be said. It was criticised, it was controversial and criticised by Jewish leaders within Zionism and outside it. A lot of people said, well, Hitler didn't support it and that Hitler's support of it was unclear. In fact, Hitler did initially criticise the agreement, but in the run-up, in the 2-3 year run-up to the outbreak of the Second World War, the invasion of Poland, I should say, Hitler did support that agreement. Now, Livingstone has said that and sod all else, which is the truth. It is the... I'm not going to swear. It's the truth. Balls and all, it's the truth. But the Conservative Friends of Israel and the Labour Friends of Israel don't like it. It's anti-Semitic. And I'm going to say this for the final time, and I won't be talking about this with George Galloway because we don't have time. What these people are really scared of, in my opinion, is people learning about the financiers, globalists and industrialists who helped Hitler come to power and who supported him right up until the time when it became apparent that he couldn't win. These are the things. And out of that, of course, was born the failure of those industrialists to place Hitler at the head of the United States of Europe. Out of that came what we know now as the European Union. That is a historical fact. It's one of the things they don't want people to understand. Madness. 19 and a half minutes past the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, ACR as well. Here's a very quick break. When we come back, I'll tell you one or two more things, and then we'll be joined by George Galloway. Back in a minute.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the doctor or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2, available now at premiumonpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do not invest another pound of your money until you've heard this message. Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my new best-selling book. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk for full details. Inside, I reveal why gold could soar to $10,000 an ounce and how to make sure you own enough of the right type of gold. To get your copy dispatched today, go to newcaseforgold.co.uk now. This book will change everything you think you know about investing in gold. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk today.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Right, welcome back to the programme. It is, It's Tuesday, April 5th, 2017. My name is Richie Allen. This is your programme, so please tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Before we go any further, let me tell you that a wonderful woman called Callie Blackwell will be on the programme with me tomorrow. You can follow Callie on Twitter. It's at Darren's Mum. She's written a book which I think goes on sale tomorrow, called The Boy in 7 Billion. Extraordinary story of how she helped heal her son naturally. Her son was gravely ill. Callie Blackwell joins the programme tomorrow. Can't wait for that. That's Thursday's programme. In the meantime, this Wednesday, George Galloway is in town. He's contesting the Gorton by-election, which takes place on the 4th of May. Sir Gerald Coughlan passed away in February, very close friend of George Galloway's. He's up here to contest that election. We'll talk about that, and we'll also talk about the allegations against the Assad government. We might even talk Brexit as well, if we have the time. It is exactly 23 minutes past the hour. Europe's most listened to independent radio show is The Richie Allen Show. You're very welcome to it. Good evening.
Alone.
Superman Lovers and Starlight on the Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 25 minutes past the hour. Beautiful Wednesday evening here in the great city of Manchester. Now, I mentioned a couple of times already, following the death of Sir Gerald Kaufman in February of this year, a great man, and I did mention on the programme last year and early this year, that he did me a couple of favours in a dispute that I had with Manchester City Council. Got to know him briefly. He was an extraordinary man. Now, our first guest was a very close friend of his. He's also a former MP, former leader of the Respect Party, a broadcaster as well, of course, no stranger to you whatsoever. And he's contesting the seat vacated by the untimely death of Gerald Kaufman. That's the Gorton by-election, which takes place on the 4th of May, which is only a few weeks away. So let's welcome to the programme George Galloway. George, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much, Richie. Thanks for the opportunity to talk.
It's marvellous to have you on, George. How influential was Gerald Kaufman in your decision to come up here and contest the election?
Well, I'm glad you spoke so warmly of Sir Gerald. He was a very close friend of mine from 1985, before I became an MP, until the very final television interview that he gave to me not many months before he passed away. And therefore, my friendship with him lasts 33 years, and he will never be forgotten. I knew everything about the Gorton constituency, about the people in the Labour Party in Gorton from Gerald. And because I did, I feel no kind of stranger here. And I many times sat down for a curry with him on the Curry Mile in Rusholme, very near to his residence. And that's one of the compelling reasons why I find myself now, as of today, officially a candidate in the Gorton by-election. The other reason is that two of my children actually live here in the area, and so I'm very regularly here. So I'm no kind of foreigner, although there are a few foreigners in the Gorton constituency, so it's a very foolish thing that they're saying that I'm an outsider, because everybody came from somewhere. I'm a Scot of Irish background. Sir Gerald was from Leeds, of Jewish background. His family perished in the Holocaust in the 1930s and 40s. Everyone came from somewhere to Manchester, and everyone found a place and a welcome here as long as they were ready to work for themselves, for their own family, but above all, for the community. That's what Sir Gerald did, and if I'm given the opportunity, that's what I'll do too.
He said an extraordinary thing, didn't he? He said, "My grandmother didn't die to provide cover for Israeli soldiers murdering Palestinian grandmothers in Gaza." An incredibly powerful thing to say. I know
it
that's,
was. Yeah. He said that, Richie, on my television show in the interview to which I refer. And nothing could be a more powerful statement than that. And as we survey the total shambles around the Ken Livingstone affair that is developing as we speak, it's worth remembering that if Gerald Kaufman was here, and how I wish he was, he would have said every word that Ken Livingstone said and more about the apartheid state of Israel and its utterly shameful, brutal treatment of the Palestinian people decade after decade after decade. So when people ask me here, what's your views on Israel and Palestine? I'm able to say my views are exactly the same as the late and great Sir Gerald Kaufman, who never conflated the Jewish faith, Judaism as a religion, with the political, ideological, and for that matter, I'm going to say atheistic creed of Zionism, because all the founders of Zionism, of course, were atheists. They didn't believe in God, but they believed God promised them Palestine.
Do you think, I want to talk about Ken Livingstone, but before we do, Will you be relying on supporters of Sir Gerald Kaufman, traditional supporters of his, who are very concerned about the extent of the Zionist lobby influence in the UK, the Conservative Friends of Israel, the Labour Friends of Israel? Will you be hoping, it's obviously a stupid question because you will, but you will be hoping that this is an issue that's paramount for many of his supporters and you'll pick up some votes, George?
Well, I, of course, have taken this view for well over 40 years.
A long time, yeah.
And did when wherever and whenever I was able to do so. But you're right, there are a lot of people in this constituency for which what's happening to the Palestinian people is of very great importance, as was the issue of Kashmir, which I toured the country and indeed farther afield across the world with Sir Gerald on the tragic plight of the people of Kashmir, like the Palestinians, held under illegal, brutal military occupation. But these are not the most important issues in this by-election. The most important issues are about the economy and the state of the constituency. If I tell you, I'm sure you'll be surprised. If not, you're a better man than me, because I was shocked that one in two of the children in Gorton are officially classed as living in child poverty, and that three out of every four families in Gorton are families on low income families. These are statistics from the Save the Children Fund. They're not from me or from Sir Gerald or anyone else. Manchester's great, as you and I both know, and all your listeners know, but Gorton can't be left behind. You can't have a gleaming city centre where all the investment and spending goes, whilst not a mile from the city centre, a whole constituency of more than 100,000 people are living in poverty, on low wages, paying high rents, with poor landlordism, bad roads, bad pavements, lack of opportunities, virtually no facilities, unless you've got the money to pay for a private gym, for a private pool, for private football facilities, and so on. It's just not acceptable that 100,000 people can be abandoned. And they're left behind. And I specialise in speaking up for the left behind.
You know, I didn't know those statistics. I'm going to be honest, I didn't know that. We're not far from Gorton and Longsight and Levenshulme. And those big problems you described there are experienced by people across the city. We can come back to that. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. But I want to talk a little bit about Ken Livingstone. And I was asked to ask you, when I announced you were coming on, I was sent a lot of emails, of course, as usual, with people asking this, asking that. And I said, right, we've agreed to talk about specific things. How powerful in 2017 is the Zionist lobby in amongst the major political parties in this country? And what is unknown, George? What did the UK populace need to know about the Zionist influence that they don't already know?
It's one of the great issues in British politics today, and it's all the more serious that not enough people know that the entire British state and its media and its political class are this day, this evening, dancing to the Israeli tune. Even Jeremy Corbyn has launched a bitter attack on Ken Livingstone and referred his case back to the Labour National Executive Committee for another round of witch hunt, presumably ending this time in expulsion, for doing nothing other than telling the historical truth. And the Al Jazeera undercover documentary about the Israel lobby in Britain, which has been seen by far too few people, but is available if you look for it, of just a few months ago, revealed a situation which you alluded to, that the Conservative Friends of Israel, Labour Friends of Israel, Liberal Friends of Israel, command the allegiance of almost every member of the British Parliament. Manchester, the city of Manchester, had 5 MPs. 4 of them were members of the Labour Friends of Israel. The only one who wasn't was the Jewish member of Parliament, the late, great Sir Gerald Kaufman. Now, why are these 4 Manchester MPs in the Labour Friends of Israel? There's no good reason for that. There's no good reason why a Labour member of Parliament would be a friend of an apartheid state practicing brutal settler colonial policies on a native people whom they usurped and stole their land. You're an Irishman. You know about settlers. You know about people being settled on other people's land in order to change the demography and drive them out, drive them away, subjugate them. And all these members of Parliament, hundreds of them, hundreds, are members of the Friends of Israel. Why? What good reason can there be? When I used to fight apartheid in South Africa, at least the Tory MPs that supported apartheid were slightly ashamed of it. They were certainly embarrassed about it. They didn't go around wearing badges supporting apartheid South Africa. They weren't ever on and off a plane for a sunny freebie in apartheid South Africa. They kept it quiet. But these people brazenly are boasting this evening. And they've got Ken Livingstone on the run. They've got Jeremy Corbyn on the run. Well, they don't have Ken on the run because he's brave enough to stand up to them. That's why they want to destroy him. But they've got Corbyn on the run this evening.
What happened to Corbyn, George? George, what's happened to Corbyn? I know you've, obviously your paths have crossed over the years and you've stood together supporting many great causes, standing up for many victims of human rights abuses. This guy went on the Andrew Marr show last year and stuttered and stumbled and apologised about anti-Semitism in the party. And only a few days later, he was embarrassed by his own commissioned report because Shami Chakrabarty came out and said, well, in fact, there isn't any endemic anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. And I'll tell you this, George, this programme is inundated with people who signed up 18 months ago to join the Labour Party because they believed in the things that Jeremy was saying and they joined and they were happy about having somebody saying something different. They paid their fees and they voted for him. And I'm telling you, George, I mean, this isn't mainstream media. We don't make stuff up. I've got the emails to prove it. People are desperately disappointed by what has happened since he took the reins. What has happened to him?
Well, I'm quite emotional hearing you speak, Richie, because I have supported Jeremy Corbyn with all of my heart on television, on radio, on the streets. I have supported him even when I thought that the job he was doing could be done better. I have stood by him on social media where I have 1 million followers 1 million times. I've broadcast everywhere my support for him. But that support ended this evening, just before you called me, when I read the attack on Livingstone that he's made on the front page of The Guardian and presumably everywhere else, and his reference back of the suspension of Livingstone, presumably with the intention that it will lead to expulsion. His attack on Ken Livingstone is not just wrong. It's not just immoral. It is utterly dishonest because he doesn't believe a word of it. That means he said it out of shameless opportunism. And you are the first person to know. I can no longer support Jeremy Corbyn's leadership because the idea that you throw your friends to the wolves one by one and imagine that the wolves will not turn on you is so ridiculous that anyone who thinks like that is not fit to be in the position that they are in. These people are out to destroy Corbyn. Ken Livingstone, age 70, is of no importance to them. They're attacking Livingston for the purpose of finally destroying Jeremy Corbyn's leadership. And he's handed them this very evening the weapon to do it. And I'm utterly bereft, emotional, and sad to be saying these words on a radio show with you this evening.
George Galloway is on the line, folks. He's contesting the Gorton by-election on May 4th this year. You're with the Richie Allen Show. And the time is exactly 19 minutes to the top of the hour. George is going to stay with us for 10 or 15 more minutes, which is good of him. And I'm not kissing his arse. It is good. He's running around. A lot of work to be done for anybody standing in any election between now and the 4th of May. That was said with an incredibly heavy heart, George. So you'll understand the point I made earlier on. I don't want to labour that point, no pun intended. But people so excited by the things that Corbyn was saying, and to be absolutely fair, when you've been in Parliament on the back benches, you've been saying these things for years about, you know, privatisation gone mad, globalisation, the tyranny of regimes, if you want to use the word regime, like Saudi Arabia, the tyranny of Israel. People expected at least some of this rhetoric from Jeremy once he took the reins, but we've got none of it. And I don't want to dwell, because I'm not important, but I told you today, this is why I haven't voted in 20 years. Because even if a guy like you came along, and I liked you, I like what you're saying, for me, in the filthy cesspool, special interest controlled world of politics, no one man can make a difference. That's not to insult you. It is wonderful to see people like you when you stand up and say things that never get said. But ultimately, guys like you don't get into power, or others like you. And guys like Corbyn, eventually, they get, you know, they basically get, as a friend of mine said, vibrated into line. It's tragic. And I mean, you're going to be hearing a lot of this, presumably, over the next couple of weeks. Can we move on to, briefly, on to Syria and the allegations made of chemical weapons deployment? My opinions on this are very, very clear. The media is behaving disgracefully. There's no concrete evidence that the Syrian government is doing it. They wouldn't have any reason to do it. Yet we're being told they're doing it. And again, Corbyn's name comes up. Because if ever you want a strong leader of the opposition to, you know, dampen down the war rhetoric, because I'm convinced Theresa May will come back from her sojourn in the Middle East with talk about we have to do something to save these children, we have to intervene. I don't think Corbyn's the man to get in the way of that. How are you reading this Syrian thing today, the Security Council, the accusations made against Syria and Russia? How do you see this one?
Well, the Syrian regime is certainly bad enough to use chemical weapons, but I doubt if they're mad enough to use chemical weapons. The war was coming to an end. They had been victorious, and there was a gathering of international leaders. The idea that they chose that day to launch a chemical weapons attack of absolutely zero military significance is stretching credulity beyond breaking point. And we've been here before. We've had these fake accusations of chemical weapons attacks against the Assad regime before. In 2014, we almost went to war. And by the way, there was only 4 speeches in Parliament which turned that debate and gave us a majority of just 13 votes against Britain going to war against Syria. And those 4 speeches came from Gerald Kaufman, me, David Davis, now Brexit Secretary, and Dr. Julian Lewis, another Conservative MP. And those 4 speeches, it was widely reported at the time, turned the atmosphere in the House and succeeded in keeping Britain out directly of a full-scale involvement in the Syrian civil war. And the proximate cause for that debate and that vote was a so-called chemical weapons attack by the Syrian regime, mounted on the very day that a UN chemical weapons team arrived in Damascus. And I said then, as I say now, the Syrian regime is bad enough, almost every regime is bad enough, to launch chemical weapons against its own people or people attacking it in order to save its regime. The question is, are they mad enough to do it? And that, my conclusion then was no. My conclusion now is no, in the absence of proper evidence. But these people don't need evidence, do they? The Americans killed 200 women and children in Mosul, in Iraq, just last week.
Yeah.
And we hardly even read about it. Never mind the thought of going to war with the people who did it. So the double standards, the hypocrisy of these people. I see that Netanyahu has just made a statement demanding that the Security Council authorize war against Syria. Imagine the man who poisons, who drops phosphorus gas, who massacres thousands of women and children, starves millions of them, illegally occupies Palestinian land across the whole of ancient Palestine, illegally annexes other people's territory, is demanding war on the utterly unproven allegation that the Syrian regime has yesterday used chemical weapons. This is a dreadful, ghastly conflict in Syria. And our country is up to its neck in it. We have been supporting the ISIS and Al-Qaeda invasion of Syria for reasons which, frankly, are beyond me. Either I'm not smart enough to work out why. I mean, the idea that they could want ISIS in power in Damascus, next door to Israel, on the Mediterranean, is just so ridiculous. It's very hard to work out why they're doing it.
You know, it's interesting, George.
They have been.
Yeah, it's interesting.
For 5 years they've been doing it.
We get people on the program, legendary CIA people like Ray McGovern and people like that, and Ray talks about,
he's a friend of mine, Ray, yeah.
You know Ray very well. Ray talks about Lebensraum for Israel, and he believes the Zionist neocon lobby, that this is part of, you know, the greater Israel plans. Listen, you and I probably have a slightly different opinion on the motivations of Bashar al-Assad, but I think we agree that the Wahhabi Saudi lunatic jihadists were certainly put up to doing what they're doing there now. Do you worry, George, that, you see, I believe there's an agenda to get a no-fly zone in there, and that's the sort of thing, before we come back to briefly talk about Gorton before you go, that's the sort of thing that could lead to catastrophe. You know, a stray airplane missile here or a stray bomb there, and next thing before we know it, we're at war with Russia. Is that fear-mongering, or is that realistic, do you think?
It's absolutely realistic, and there will be no-fly zone in Syria. Russia is not going to stop flying in Syria, and if they impose a no-fly zone, they'll have to fight Russia, a nuclear-armed superpower. Is that what the British people are going to sleepwalk into? Now, I'm not on the side of the government in Damascus. I'm just against their enemies. Their enemies are the worst people on the earth. ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Israel, Saudi Arabia, the United States, Britain, France. I'm against all of them. And I could never support any foreign attack on any Arab country. I didn't support it when they were doing it to Iraq, and I'm certainly not going to support it if they even dream of doing it in Syria. The difference is, when they destroyed Iraq, Russia was weak, enfeebled, led by a drunk Yeltsin. Now Russia is strong and led by an extremely popular leader with huge public opinion poll ratings in his own country, who has made Russia strong again. And if they want to fight Russia, they will find that Russia will fight them back. And God knows where that ends. That ends in a potential nuclear holocaust. Everyone should think very carefully about where these idiots are leading us. Boris Johnson making our foreign policy? Is that some kind of bad joke? But there he was today, demanding action. Something must be done. And it may be, I'm looking at Trump's statement in Jordan, it may be that under all the pressure on Trump over his so-called relationship with Russia, that they forced Trump into a corner where he might be prepared to countenance some kind of military engagement direct in the Syrian conflict. If he does, it'll be the biggest mistake he ever did.
Now, finally, on that, you're going to be out and about in Gorton over the next few weeks, as well as telling people there that you're going to be a voice to bring development and to bring enterprise and opportunities back to Gorton, which undoubtedly you'll be telling people. Will you be talking about these issues as well? I mean, will you be saying to people, look, we're facing a very dangerous situation, and I'm going to be a voice, as I was previously when I was an MP, against this sort of madness? Is this what you're going to be saying to the people of Gorton, finally?
I'm saying that this is a dangerous and unstable moment in the world. And the clowns that are running our national and international affairs cannot be left to lead us into disaster without a strong, clear voice who can see the way things are going, standing up against them. And if I'm elected, if I'm back in Parliament for the seventh time on May the 4th, then that's exactly what I will do. As long as God gives me breath, I'll be there on my feet, wherever it is, TV, radio, streets, or Parliament. I'll be standing up for a different kind of foreign policy and a different kind of society here at home, one in which the left behind begin to catch up. So that's my slogan, that's my offer, Richie. I hope that any of your listeners in the constituency will give it a good think before the polling day arrives on the 4th of May.
It was fascinating chatting with you. I must say, by the way, the film that you produced about the financial wheelings and dealings of Tony Blair and everything else, the killings of Tony Blair, is a very good film. I watched it just after
thanks,
it was released,
thanks.
And I do recommend it. If anybody
it's
wants
now,
to know...
It's on Netflix now, and of course you can get it on Amazon, iTunes, and HMV, and so on. I really do think it's worth the trouble.
It certainly is worth a look. Good luck with everything. Good luck on the 4th of May. We're not Ofcom compliant or regulated, so I can say whatever I want. And thanks for coming on the programme.
It's been a pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
Cheers, George. George Galloway on the line to us there. I believe George is only around a corner from our studio, but we couldn't get him in here. It's exactly 7 minutes to the top of the hour. Lots of tweets came in. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. If you want to see what other people are saying, you need only go to twitter.com, and on where it says search Twitter, if you put Richie Allen Show, all one word, you'll see what everybody is saying to me, and you can take issue politely with what is being said, or agree with them. It's as simple as that. What is it? 6.5 minutes to the top of the air. Some music. Let's take a breather. Some music, I think, Maestro. A little bit of music. This is Wang Chung. I said it yesterday, if I ever play anything post-1990, I think I might have done that earlier on, actually. Send for the Men in White Coats. This is Dance All Day from Wang Chung on The Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
Take your baby by the hand. I make her do a handstand. And take your baby by the heel. And do the next thing that you feel. We were so in vice. In a dance hall days. We were cool on craze. When I, you, and everyone we knew could believe, do, and share in what was true. Oh, I said, dance all day long. Take your baby by the hair and pull her closer, there, there, there. And take your baby by the ears.
in place. In a dance hall days, we were cool and crazed. When I, you, and everyone we knew to believe, do, to share in what was true. All days love, dance all days, dance all days love. Take your baby by the wrist, and in her mouth an amethyst, and in her red to sapphire blue. And you need her and she needs you. 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 And you need her.
Music is an amazing thing. I was a very young teenager when a film came out with John Cusack, who's one of my favourite actors of all time, and Nicolette Sheridan, I think, very attractive young lady back in the day. A film called The Sure Thing. And when you're young and you hear a song that you love, you don't know what it is, and you've got the VCR on rewind, and that song featured in that film, and I loved it ever since. Wang Chung. What a bombshell dropped by George Galloway on this programme. He's appeared with and stood with for many, many years Jeremy Corbyn on various protest marches, spoke at the same functions about the human rights abuses of the Saudis, of the Israelis, and wherever else human rights abuses are going on. And you heard it first on the Richie Allen Show. George Galloway has said that his support for Jeremy Corbyn will be no more because Corbyn has effectively thrown Ken Livingstone under a bus, which is exactly what has happened. And one of the things that I despise about people who make radio programmes is bigging oneself up and all that egotistical crap. But I've only ever been right twice in my life, like a broken clock. And I said very strongly, I was very passionate about Alexis Tsipras in Greece, and I was extremely passionate, and I even got very defensive at some of the abuse that came my way when I explained to people that Corbyn wouldn't be any different. And people were very hurt by that, particularly people who had listened to the programme since day one. And when you and I, we have a relationship, we speak to one another every day, we have a chat and we talk about these issues, and people were hurt. They said, the guy's not even in yet, Richie, you're not giving him a chance. I've seen it and done it for years. You know, even the most well-intentioned. I mentioned entrainment earlier on, vibration, and it was David who said that, if memory serves me. When it first began to, you know, when it became obvious that it was going very badly wrong for the supporters of Corbyn. No man or woman can change the world through their navigation of the eternal sea. It can't happen. Now, people might go and vote George Galloway in Gorton, and they might choose to do that because, well, at least he'll talk about Palestine. At least when he gets an opportunity, he will call the Prime Minister. He will basically equate the government with murder because of what's happening in Yemen. And people might go and vote for him based on that. And that's fair enough. But as I said to him, and I'll say it to my dying breath, the real solutions to the lunacy that we heard in the monologue about Syria, the real solutions don't lie in politics, the eternal sea, as it's been called for time immemorial. That's my opinion. It's why I haven't gone near a ballot box in 20 years, except for I went because the polling centre is actually a half a kilometre away from where we're based, and I went around the corner on June 23rd to vote Leave, partly because I wanted to be mischievous and I wanted to take a picture of the ballot and put it on Facebook to act the Egypt, because I like acting the Egypt every now and then. But I've never gone and voted in a national or a local election, as I said, in 20 years nearly, because I see it as futile, you know. But I understand why people will say, well, I'll vote for him because at least, you know, those chambers, those rooms, Palestine isn't being mentioned there. And if he gets in there, well, at least somebody's going to say something, you know, every now and then when the opportunity arises. It's exactly 1 minute past the hour. Just to remind you, in case you needed reminding, you are listening to The Richie Allen Show, which broadcasts live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, Alternate Current Radio, and TuneIn Radio. Bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. For details of the Worldwide Wake Up Tour, you need only go to theworldwidewakeup.com, and all of the dates are listed there for the rest of 2017. Go and see David there. Now, in a few minutes, we're going to be, we're off to Canada. Wonderful, the technology that we have. And we're going to be speaking with Professor Tony Hall, who last October was suspended from his tenured position at Lethbridge University. He was accused of hate crimes, effectively, and the promotion of hatred. The suspension was condemned by teachers pretty much everywhere. We're going to find out more about Tony, what happened to him, and what's going on with that case now. I think you'll find it fascinating. I think you'll find it fascinating. Anyway, Garrodo Colmón, our friend, put me in touch with Tony. I'm glad he did that. These are important issues to be discussing as well. And while I've got you listening to me, Callie Blackwell will be on the programme tomorrow. She's the author of The Boy in 7 Billion. She's an advocate for healthy living and holistic medicines. And she treated her gravely ill young boy, Darren, with medicinal cannabis, which had a profoundly positive effect on him. I was asked to get Callie on the programme. She reached out on Twitter. I responded, and she's going to be on. I think a lot of people saw her speaking on national television recently. I think she spoke with ITV This Morning programme. So Callie joins us tomorrow as well. And when I have more details about tomorrow's programme, you'll be the first to know. So in the meantime, it's a very short break. And shortly, stay tuned, Professor Tony Hall joins this programme.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they do.
Traffic 2. Available now at premillionpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do not invest another pound of your money until you've heard this message. Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my new best-selling book. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk for full details. Inside, I reveal why gold could soar to $10,000 an ounce and how to make sure you own enough of the right type of gold. To get your copy dispatched today, go to newcaseforgold.co.uk now. This book will change everything you think you know about investing in gold. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk today.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Richie Allen.
Right, stay tuned to your Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com. Professor Tony Hall is standing by. Looking forward to chatting with him. In the meantime, this is Michael Jackson and Can You Feel It? Love this song. Ah, it's good to be with you. Wednesday, April 5th. No other show like this. Keep your tweets coming in at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Right, 7 minutes past the hour. Let's move on. Thanks for all the tweets. Just to reiterate, if you go to twitter.com and where it says search Twitter, if you put Richie Allen Show, all one word, and press enter, you'll see what other people are saying. All right, so good evening to you. And sorry I haven't read out so many tweets thus far. It's been a busy old show. You're going to have a lot to say, I think, about our next topic, our next subject. Delighted that our mutual friend Garodo Colmón introduced me to Professor Tony Hall. I mentioned at the beginning of the programme and a few minutes ago, Tony was suspended from his tenured position at the University of Lethbridge last year. He was accused of violating Canada's Human Rights Act. He was accused of using a YouTube channel to promote hatred of Jews. I think, quite rightly, his suspension was widely condemned by academics and by teachers across the country. It caused a storm of controversy. We talked about it at the time. It's great that he's joining us tonight. He's live on the line now. Let's welcome to the show Professor Tony Hall. Tony, thanks for coming on. How are you?
I'm very well. Richie Allen.
Listen, what a day for you to be talking to us, the day when the Labour Party suspended the former Mayor of London, Ken Livingstone, for another year for comments Ken made about the Havara Agreement between the Nazi authorities and Jewish Zionists based in Germany. All true, all provable, and yet Ken has been suspended. I'm not trying to make light of this, Tony, because it's very serious. You know how he feels, right?
Well, of course, the transfer agreement in 1933 between the Zionist organization of Germany and the government of Adolf Hitler, you know, it's well known that there was a treaty of sorts to divert Jewish emigration to Palestine. This is a matter of record. Edwin Black, a very prominent Jewish academic, a Zionist-oriented academic, has written a book about it. So the idea that this lobby, the same lobby that has burned books, for instance, at Amazon.com, that doesn't want authentic discussion of evidence-based history, wants to rather have a open field for a kind of concocted, engineered version of history that serves the interests of Israel first activists, whether they be in Israel or many other countries throughout the West. This is becoming draconian. It's becoming an assault on what we had called liberal democracy. All the liberal democracies are in disarray, are in chaos, because this particular lobby that influences through bribery, through intimidation, through censorship. You know, we know about the Epstein ring and how, you know, sex and blackmail can be used to control politics, control our judiciary, control the universities. And of course, I feel that I have a particular responsibility to speak about what's going on in the universities in my own case, but also to relate it to an assault on the principles of academic freedom. And of course, a key to that is an institution called tenure. I am a tenured full professor. This tenure is supposed to protect academics who touch controversial subjects from being subject to arbitrary punishments and removals from their livelihood, from their classroom. And that is exactly what happened to me.
Yeah, Norm Finkelstein is an old friend of mine, been speaking with him for many years. The parallels between what happened to him and what happened to you. Before you tell our listeners some of them might not know what happened, Tony, before you get into that, just to mention, George Galloway was on the show in hour one, and George touched on the all-pervasive influence of the Zionist lobby in this country through the Conservative Friends of Israel, the Labour Friends of Israel. George was lamenting the fact that these politicians openly walk around Westminster with little badges, little pins on their lapels, bragging about their support for Israel. We know what it's like in the United States, the influence at Congress and Senate. What's it like in Canada?
Well, it's draconian. Of course, Stephen Harper, when he was prime minister, he had he very clearly put Israeli interests before Canadian interests in a very provocative fashion. Before I get into that with Canada, I just want to say that George Galloway is very strong voice condemning Zionist excessiveness on many fronts. But one place he will not go is into 9/11 and the fact that 9/11 was a giant false flag terror event, that it was blamed on Islamic jihadists, but in fact the leading role in the 9/11 attacks or the 9/11 debacle is, I would say the evidence is quite strong that Israel first Mossad-related agents led the engineering of the 9/11 false flag. George Galloway won't go there. So since 2008, I have been studying this. I've been reading Christopher Bolin. I've been listening to Alan Sabrowski. There's a very important book just been translated from French to English by Dr. Kevin Barrett, my co-host on False Flag Weekly News. It's called From Yahweh to Zion, and it focuses at the end on 9/11 and the Kennedy assassination, attributes both these to Zionist-led operations. So I've been, as a tenured full professor, a senior professor, I felt that I'm in a position to go into this subject of Israel's relationship to 9/11, to treat it like a full-fledged academic specialty. And if it hadn't been, for instance, for Noam Chomsky, who, didn't just sort of ignore or somewhat misrepresent 9/11 like many on the progressive left do, but actually condemned those who studied 9/11 as kind of losers and misfits and people wasting, their opportunities for positive political activism. Noam Chomsky has a lot of responsibility for, in a way, shutting down the peace movement, because if you don't have a good analysis of 9/11 and the false flag events which flowed from it, you can say, well, I'm against all the bad things that happened since 9/11.
But can I say this, Tony? Can I just jump in there? To defend Chomsky, who I've interviewed, in fact, I interviewed him several times when I was based in Spain, and I'm going to agree with you that they might very well support the official narrative of 9/11. I certainly don't. You mentioned Kevin Barrett there. I've been chatting with Kevin for years. I don't. But to defend George Galloway and Noam Chomsky, whatever anybody might think about them, maybe it's just that they don't believe you and me and others who say the official narrative is nonsense. And whether we like it or not, they are entitled to hold those beliefs, right?
Well, at some point, these are people who put a lot of store in their words and profess to have, you know, evidence-based analysis. And I would say the official story of 9/11, the narrative that we were given before the Twin Towers even fell by Ehud Barak on BBC News, who told us that Osama bin Laden was involved, that we needed a concerted war on terror, who laid out the whole scenario of the global war on terror, you know, the morning of 9/11. It seems to me this story has been thoroughly discredited. I mean, what about Building 7 and all of that and, you know, controlled demolition, and that's sort of an entry point. So, no, I don't agree with you that somehow we embrace all the good things that George Galloway has identified, or, you know, bad things he's identified about Zionism. And Noam Chomsky clearly seems to me to be a gatekeeper, a limited kind of hangout. And so I think we really do have to deal with the fact that at some point you can't just ignore the evidence of 9/11 or refer to it in a very shallow way. And so I would take this criticism towards the academy. My point with Noam Chomsky is that, you know, we should have institutes within the universities where issues like what happened on 9/11, and because we didn't deal with what happened on 9/11, we have, you know, every week practically another episode of false flag terrorism blamed on as if it's Islamic extremists acting alone out of no other motivation than hatred of the West and sort of religious zealotry and psychotic mentality. Lie that we see in the mainstream media is definitely promotes Islamophobia, definitely promotes sort of hatred and fear of Muslims, which is the necessary ingredient for the geopolitical, you know, the dominant geopolitical initiatives of our time, the invasions abroad, the surveillance state and police state intrusions at home. So I don't really give a pass as easily as you seem to be doing to those who treat 9/11 without the attention to evidence.
Well, let me explain my position.
Deserve.
Let me explain my position. It's not that I'm given a pass. I wouldn't dare to patronize you. You're a very, very smart guy. You're an intellectual. So I'm kind of surprised that you would take that line. We have to accept that sometimes people disagree with us because they genuinely disagree, not because they're frightened to say what it is they really think or because they are in some way hiding the truth. I think that's a very destructive path to go down, Tony. And I'm surprised, again, a guy is smart, and you mean you are a smart man. We need to embrace these people, not exclude them and be kind of combative with them, because we're better off chatting to them and trying to find out why they are, you know, accepting of a certain narrative. And I often refer to, you know, look at the totality of what somebody has done before judging them. And Galloway standing up for the rights of Palestinians and the many speeches he's given at Westminster in the absence of any other, interest in Gaza. I personally wouldn't be dismissive of him, and I wouldn't call it giving him a pass. I would just accept that for whatever reason he disagrees with us, let's just move on. What do you say?
Well, yeah, before we move on, and I think this is an important subject.
Yeah.
Noam Chomsky has, you know, been one of my educators. You know, how many progressives in the academy look to Chomsky and say, well, he kind of showed us how to do it and how to criticize the dominant powers. And you know, he has a tremendous body of work. And I am certainly not saying, and of course he's old now, he's beyond the point where you'd say he should be fired from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, which does happen to be a major site of, yeah, you know, military-related research. And isn't it interesting that he's been there for so long? But I would, I'm saying, yes, okay, they have their places in history and their contributions that they've made. And I'm certainly not saying that they should be, you know, eliminated or denigrating them to some extent, but I'm pointing out vigorously, robustly, that I think they have a real problem in their failure to address the evidence of 9/11. But I'm, you know, this might then relate to your earlier question, what's going on in Canada? Well, I have been suspended. I'm not dealing with a situation where somebody is disagreeing with me vehemently and saying nasty things about me, like you could accuse me of doing to Galloway and Chomsky. I was suspended from one day to the next. I was ripped from the classroom in midterm from the University of Lethbridge. The president of the University of Lethbridge, Mike Mann, acting on behalf of the Board of Governors, threw overboard all the rules of due process and procedure at my university and invoked some legislation and has effectively preempted the institution of tenure, certainly in Alberta institutions and arguably in Canadian and North American institutions. You know, once you assault the system in one place and establish the precedent that a university president can simply cite some Alberta Human Rights Act, it's been, you know, 6 months since there has been this reference to something called the Alberta Human Rights Commission, who may have an argument against me for, among other things, how I've connected Israel to 9/11. It's been 6 months and I have not yet heard from the Alberta Human Rights Commission. I have not heard a word from them. So the governance of the University of Lethbridge, the administrative side of the governance, has thrown aside the collective agreement, broken all the rules, given in to a tremendous push, a lobby push from something called B'nai B'rith Canada, an organization connected to the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. You know, Abe Foxman was formerly the mouthpiece of this organization. And, it all begins not with something I did say, but with a planted Facebook post put on my Facebook page without my knowledge, supposedly by a person called Glenn Davidson, who I happen to know. And I've asked him, did you post this post? And he says, no, I didn't. It's a horrendous post. It says, kill all Jews. It says the Holocaust didn't happen. It uses the word kike. It's, you know, a horrific, ugly post that I condemned on False Flag Weekly News in mid-September, as soon as I found out about it. But this had been going on by the time I found out about it, this propaganda campaign, this smear and disinformation campaign, initially led by the B'nai B'rith Canada and then spreading to, you know, alternative and mainstream media sources. So that by the time I started to deal with it, there was already this momentum building. Now, this planted Facebook post was conflated with a video which I actually did make in Germany last June, and I was invited by the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust to make a statement. Do you agree with open debate on the Holocaust? And it seemed to me that's a no-brainer. We can't at universities allow the precedent that there's certain subjects that we just don't talk about, that we block off, that we say this subject is so perfectly handled, it's so well done that it can never be improved upon by any new evidence, by, you know, new minds addressing the issue. So, of course, I'm for open debate on the Holocaust, open debate on every subject. Now, does saying you're for open debate on the Holocaust, does that make you a something called a Holocaust denier? So when this planted Facebook post was written about, I started to see this word Holocaust denier associated with my name. And of course, what is that? That these weaponized terms like anti-Semitism, like conspiracy theorists, like Holocaust denier, you know, I started to see this grouping of terms, and sometimes 9/11 truther is thrown in there. These weaponized terms are certainly exploited by the Anti-Defamation League to try to, you know, ruin careers and shut down debate. And, you know, there's like the Canary Mission blacklisting site. You just go to a site called Canary Mission, and Lanny Poppy is on there. I'm kind of proud to be listed among some of the other academics who have been blacklisted, blackballed. It starts as a campaign against boycotts, divestment, and sanctions movement. The fact that on many campuses, there are Palestinian-related groups and other groups who want to do essentially an extension of what happened with South Africa and the apartheid regime, where there were sanctions, boycotts against doing business with the white minority regime. And the view is that this same strategy could be used against the policies of Israel, which arguably are apartheid, and some would say are sort of far beyond apartheid into outright genocidal. So this manipulation of the campus culture, university settings by the likes of Daniel Pipe or David Horowitz, Front Page, you know, there's a vast, highly funded, highly organized lobby, and it's lobby sounds sort of innocuous, but it's really a kind of hit squad to destroy free and open discussion on our campuses, especially in United Kingdom, especially in North America, especially, you know, in places like France and Germany, and take over. You know, we've seen the takeover of the mainstream media and how there is a very narrow narrative that is allowed to be articulated in this mainstream media. Now universities are being subject to the same kind of pressures, financial pressures, intimidation pressures. And so my case has now, you know, shaping up to become, I think, a bit of a symbol of, you know, how far is this going to go? And are we going to just stand by? Are my colleagues in the academy in Canada and North America, beyond in UK, are we going to just stand by and allow our campuses to become subject to, you know, powerful political lobbies? And there's one political lobby that sort of preempts all others for its ruthlessness and power, the Israel First Zionist lobby that, you know, wants us to look at the Jewish settlements in a certain light, to look at Palestinian-Israeli relations in a certain light, wants us to accept that anything that Israel does vis-a-vis the Palestinians is self-defense. You know, we talk about these issues on False Flag Weekly News. I'm co-host with Dr. Kevin Barrett. I think Dr. Kevin Barrett, you know well, and he's been on this show. And we talk often about, you know, Israel-related false flags and, you know, have a view of 9/11. I also speak frequently on Press TV. And I have traveled now twice to Tehran to conferences there. And the Islamic Republic of Iran and its public broadcasting venue, Press TV, which George Galloway used to be very active on, you know, the Iranian government, the Islamic government of Iran, takes a very strong position vis-a-vis the Palestinians. And we can talk about the treatment of Palestinians and what's happening to the Palestinians, the 7,000 of them in Israeli dungeons, and all the abuses, the knocking over of houses, and now the sort of U.S. backing, the Trump government's backing for the expansion of these Jewish settlements and the destruction of any possibility for a genuine two-state solution, that someday the Palestinians might, you know, have their own state. That possibility, I think, has been preempted by this very elaborate building project, 600,000 Jewish settlers on the West Bank. And of course, they change the political discourse within Israel and make the peace party within Israel, you know, less powerful. And so Israel politics have been moving farther and farther from the right, to the right, away from their sort of labor Zionist roots towards the Likudnik Zionist, revisionist Zionist approach to greater Israel, expanding Israel. Israel is becoming a very expansionary project, like the United States was once an expansionary project pushing to the West.
It's a taboo subject, by the way. On network television in the UK, these issues are taboo subjects. They are not discussed. I can't remember, and I don't think there are many men or women who monitor the mainstream media in this country, radio and television, in the manner I do. It's what makes up the basis of this program. We critique the media every single day, and then we speak to guests. These are taboo subjects. You will never hear a news item about the difficulties the day-to-day hardships of people in Gaza. You'll never hear anything about it. You might hear about settlements briefly, but you'll hear nothing about it. You get no comment from anybody associated with any groups in Palestine, in Gaza. It is absolutely tragic. I just want to do a quick recap, Tony. Professor Tony Hall is on the line to us. Tony's a tenured professor at Lethbridge University. He's been suspended since October. Widespread condemnation of that. Accusations were levelled at him and thrown at him. No proof was offered. Tony makes programmes asking questions about terrorist events, about geopolitical things, analysing geopolitics in a way that asking questions that are not asked on mainstream television and radio. It's good to have him on the programme. It's exactly 29 minutes to the top of the hour. We've got about 15 to 18 minutes left with Tony. And there are a lot of tweets coming in, and I will get to them in a minute there. So keep them coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show. richie@richieallen.co.uk is the email address. Tony, I mean, we saw what happened to Finkelstein. He writes a book about the Holocaust industry. One of the great books, I think. It's one of the best books I've ever read. We saw what happened. He accused what's-his-face of plagiarism, Dershowitz.
Dershowitz.
He was right. Dershowitz was absolutely caught with his trousers down. He was plagiarising. Look what happened to Norm. You know, I mean, yeah. You must have expected a man in your position. This is in no way to criticise you at all, by the way. But you must have known, Tony, that these people were going to come after you. They're not, you know exactly how rabid, and I might be criticised for using the word rabid. I don't mean, you know, to insult anybody, but that particular lobby group, you described them as being, you know, vicious, tenacious. I'm going to use the word rabid. You must have known it was coming down the line. You saw what happened to Kevin Barrett. You knew this was coming, right?
Well, I have a little different history than Kevin Barrett. Kevin Barrett was in 2006 put out of the University of Wisconsin when he started to incorporate 9/11 and a variety of perspectives on 9/11 into his introductory course on Islamic studies. I started in the academy in 1982 in Sudbury, Ontario, in something called the Department of Native Studies. My PhD thesis was on relationships with indigenous peoples, first in North America, but increasingly over time, I began to look at the colonization of different parts of the world and the treatment of indigenous peoples as a coherent subject, eventually I started to call this subject globalization studies. But I didn't come into the academy and my period of time where I was being hired and tenured and early promotions, Israel was not my focus. It really became my focus around 2007, 2008. And I had a very gifted student from the UK, lived in Canada, Joshua Blakeney, and he started to apply my writings on indigenous peoples here and there, especially in North America, to the Palestine-Israel matter. And, you know, I have to say that my first response to him was, Josh, you know, for my generation, we kind of leave the criticism of Israel to the Jewish professors, like maybe Noam Chomsky, and some of these Jewish professors will do a very good job. But it's very fraught, it's very sort of dangerous and difficult for us, I guess I could use the word goy, but you know, non-Jewish people to address this. We don't seem to have, you know, it can raise flags and tensions in different ways. And Joshua's response, this is my graduate student, was more or less, you know, to heck with that. Like, you know, this happened a long time ago. So he started to go into these subjects. He started to blog for Veterans Today. He started to make ties and connections with Press TV. And I started to listen to his analysis of the Palestine-Israel situation. And I felt, well, I have to be responsible towards my graduate student. And it does happen that sometimes graduate students lead us into new subjects. And so it's really not till 2008 that, I meet Kevin Barrett on the air, a Native activist, a Mohawk activist by the name of Splitting the Sky, who attempted a citizen's arrest of George Bush in 2009. And Splitting the Sky and Joshua and Kevin Barrett and I worked on this a lot. Cynthia McKinney got involved. Ramsey Clark, the former Attorney General of the United States, got involved, you know, trying to bring out the fact that George W. Bush is a credibly accused war criminal, and he shouldn't be allowed to just travel around. He should be held subject to the law, just like Tony Blair should be subject to the law. And,
yes.
And much to my surprise, a group in Winnipeg of Jewish activists, when I was giving a paper there, entrapped me and connected me to a picture of a swastika. And, you know, much to my surprise, these subjects that I was going into, including 9/11, immediately seemed to get this intense response from Israel First activists. Even though in my early days of 9/11, I wasn't particularly focusing on the relationship of Israel to the crime of 9/11. So it's just been in recent years that I have widened the discussion. I've sort of took Kevin Barrett and his role in the Academy as a kind of martyr very seriously. It became clear to me this is an erudite man. This is somebody who might have had a career like Noam Chomsky if he'd had the backing. You know, look at how prolific he is and how you know, many faceted his scholarship is. And you're going to see in his translation of the Guillenot book, Laurent Guillenot book, from Zion to Yahweh, you know, another dimension of Kevin Barrett's, you know, his French language expertise and his engagement with the French language truthers. In any case, so it's been fairly recently coming. I did make a commitment to myself when I became full professor that, hey, I'm as protected as it's possible to be in the Academy. My sense of my mission or my professional responsibilities, I should take advantage of this and speak about issues that maybe some of my younger colleagues, people on the cusp of getting tenure or, you know, going through earlier stages of tenure and promotion, things they might be wary of saying. So I do feel that, I've tried to be responsible. I try to use evidence. I am going into areas that are somewhat new to me. I also go into Fukushima, for instance, which I think is a hugely dangerous, menacing, you know, it's assaulting life on Earth in a major way, and there's not a proper response to
Tony,
it.
Tony, just before we go there, because we could go down that road, we've got about 10, 12 minutes left. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought Kevin up. There's something I want to ask, and this isn't because I feel in any way pressured to be objective or anything like that. I mean this. I've known Kevin since 2009, and I've asked Kevin this question several times. I'm going to put this question to you. I believe, in fact, I know from looking through your work over the last few days, and I knew about you anyway, I know that there isn't anything racist, there isn't anything prejudicial about the work you do. I know this. You take a scholarly approach to what you do. It's the same with Kevin Barrett. But what I'm going to say you might not like, and I'm not going to name names because I don't do that for professional reasons, libel being one, number one, but two, I just don't do it. The independent media, if we want to label this thing of ours, sound like Tony Soprano, this thing of ours, the independent media, right? It is beset with people who hate Jews, Tony, because they just hate Jews. And some of these people write for online publications like Veterans Today and others, and they really hate Jews. I know this because I've been watching them for years. And I don't know whether they're serious, some of them, or whether they are there to discredit the work of people who want to explore the origins of Rothschild Zionism, its influence on geopolitics over the last 300-400 years, all these great subjects that are important. Unfortunately, bald-headed, as we say in Ireland, bald-headed, naked, bloody racists exist. They are out there. They are.
Oh, well, racism, you know, exists in many forms,
yeah.
And you know, it's part of the human makeup, I suppose, the human personality, that human beings sometimes develop hatreds, and sometimes these hatreds can kind of be blind and irrational and, you know, reactionary. And so I wouldn't disagree yeah. with you overtly, although I would also say that this kind of rhetoric can often be inculcated from within, you know, Zionism, yeah. because there is a need to sort of publicize this idea that anti-Semitism is just out of control and rampant. And so we need more laws, more hate speech laws, more censorship, you know, more control of the universities.
I agree.
More control of the internet, more control.
But know, there is more, a but, more... Tony. Tony, there is What's a but. That? I agree with all that, but there is a but. There are people with big followings online who will connect Israel to a supermarket not opening on a Sunday. There are people who will connect Israel to getting a flat tire on their bike. Now, even a broken clock is right twice a day. I know what Zionism is. I know its origins, the secret society that it was. I know what it's meant to do and the evil of it. But I also know that Israel, the government, isn't responsible for every bloody thing that happens every day of the week.
And not everybody sticks to the language of Israel and Zionism. Yeah. Some deploy the word Jewish in a provocative way, in a way that, you know, I stress, you know, I don't want to get into any ethnic slurs towards any group. You know, we're all humans. And my approach is, you know, let's do the best we can to transcend hatred and to embrace some kind of confederacy of peoples in the earth and get away from this warmongering, you know, hate-drenched reality yeah. where it's not just speech that's happening. It's drones and depleted uranium and massive weaponry that is smashing into primarily brown-skinned peoples around the world. You know, and we're seeing... you know, great creations like our universities being smashed up and essentially rendered propaganda factories. You know, we have to deal with many tough realities. And I would say the group that is, you know, most subject to mass hatred, engineered, inculcated hatred, you know, which you see being stoked up on the front page of your newspapers and your mainstream media television telecasts, is our Muslims, collectively Muslims. Muslims were sort of cast in the role that was once afforded to communists in the Cold War and to the Soviet Union. And then there's, you know, suddenly the Soviet Union is no longer there as an enemy, and a new enemy was needed and was invented and created and presented
and behold,
I would say, Israel first.
Yeah, and lo and behold, advocate. We have it. Lo and behold, we have it. If we want to stay with the universities for the last few minutes, then we can get you back on in the future to talk about Fukushima. Let's stay with the universities. Professor Frank Faraday from Kent University, the professor of sociology, was on the program during the week. And what he said was scary enough, Tony. He said that through the creation of safe spaces and the ludicrous imposition of gender-neutral language, what universities are creating now and sending out into the world are conformists. Now, this guy, this is a brilliant conversation. I didn't play much of a part in it. I asked the basic questions. This guy was first class. And he said, this is what's happening. And he seemed, I don't want to misrepresent him because he isn't here now, but he went along with what you were saying. Universities, which used to be fantastic, you know, halls of debate and challenging speech and arguments, Tony, great arguments, are now just places, you know, that basically impotent institutions turning out conformists.
They're not actually acting as impotent institutions. I don't feel that it's an impotent agency that has pushed me out of the classroom and has violated all the rules. You know, Dr. Mann, the president of my university, Mike Mann, his email is mikemann@uleth.ca. I mean, what is his justification for saying, now we're just going to shut down a professor here who's actually, you know, on the social media and trying to, you know, as I see it, going doing False Flag Weekly News with Dr. Barrett or doing this show. This is my calling as a professor. This is what we're encouraged to do. This is serving the public interest. This is serving the community good that we, you know, I could be wrong. I could be wrong on some subjects and right on other subjects. But the fact is, I'm engaged in a discussion on very important issues of the day. So what is the justification for the likes of the administration at the University of Lethbridge for sort of, you know, leveling the playing field? So we have a kind of monoculture of ideas, and some ideas are just declared to be by executive dictate, you know, undiscussable and outside the realm of what is the possible curriculum of a university. This is not acceptable. You know, this goes against the heritage of universities, hundreds of years of peer review and developing the view that we're not just subject to political dictates. We've got to have, you know, our colleagues and our peers, those who have demonstrated expertise in various fields. If such a constituency wants to come and criticize me, fine. But
and
to
debate
say
you, yeah.
you're just out of the classroom in midterm because I don't like your connection of Israel to 9/11, that's unacceptable. That is truly unacceptable. I mean, argue with me, bring in an expert. Let's have a conference at the university on the subject. But just to say, no, this is a forbidden idea, that's toxic. That's corrosive. That demeans the university system. You know, the question of hatreds and who is subject to hatreds and hate speech and who has to be shut down because they're promoting hatred and that kind of thing. What about the dilemma of Germany these days? I mean, can Germans look back at their history and develop some kind of sane analysis of it? Do we just have to stay in some fantasy world where, you know, oh, of course, we were all angels and enlightenment, and those German people, they were all dastardly. And the only acceptable thing for a contemporary German to do is to say, oh, yes, my parents, my grandparents, they were the worst people ever. And, you know, this is the quintessence of evil of all time. You know, the Holocaust, I mean, haven't there been many Holocausts? What about the Holocausts of indigenous peoples in the Americas since 1492, the treatment of the Aborigines in Australia, what the people in Syria and the Iraq in the Middle East are facing right now?
Armenia.
You know, we need to be much more broad in our discussion and not sort of say this one episode, we're going to put it on a pedestal. This is the quintessence of evil of all time. End of story. Muslims have a religion that, you know, endangers the world. Germans should know their place and just be happy to accept any number of millions of migrants from anywhere in the world because Merkel is somehow, you know, what is Germany's constitution? Germany doesn't really have a constitution. Germany's constitution was created by its conquerors. What is happening out of Germany? Germany is supplying submarines to Israel that are filled up with nuclear weapons and parked off the shore in you know, on the Gulf, off the shore of Iran. You know, we need to have
an open discussion about this. Yeah.
For open forums for discussion, like you are hosting here on your show, Richie Allen. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk as candidly as I can about really serious issues.
They're vital issues, Tony. I want to ask about your colleagues at the university. Have they been and do they continue to be supportive of you? And when will you know what the decision is on your future at the university?
Well, the Faculty Association, the University of Lethbridge Faculty Association, immediately identified the maneuverings of the university administration as illegal, as essentially throwing overboard the collective agreement of being of the nature of union busting in a certain way. So there is a court procedure going forward there. The Association of Faculty Associations, the sort of umbrella group of Canadian Faculty Associations, the 68,000 member strong Canadian Association of University Teachers, CAUT, has taken up the case, is putting in motion a series of actions which lead to a censorship of University of Lethbridge, and that would mean it's sort of like BDS, don't go and give a lecture there, don't apply for a job there. This would be a serious black mark on the base of University of Lethbridge. You know, hopefully saner minds can prevail. The fact is, I'm not in the classroom. At first, I was suspended without pay. My pay has been restored. But the fact remains that I am being prohibited. I'm banned from even walking on the campus where I worked for 26 years. I don't know about the legality of that. How can a university president in a public institution, a provincial institution in Alberta, just declare this person or that person can't come on campus? So, I'm facing severe recriminations. And I'd have to say University of Lethbridge is a kind of dangerous workplace right now, at least for those who want to talk freely and openly about the big issues of our time. And I would say the academy generally is under a cloud right now, and that universities are dangerous places for those interested in upholding the mission, the higher mission of the universities, which are supposed to be places of protection and safety for those who choose to go into the issues, hard issues of, you know, what is true and what is not true. I mean, that's what it basically comes down to. And, 9/11 would be a very excellent case in point. Can we have free and open debate on that subject, for instance?
Listen, we've got 20 seconds left. I've got to be really tight on that. Let our listeners know where they can hear your program, Tony.
It's called, it's on No Lies Radio. It's called False Flag Weekly News. We do it, for me, it's Friday morning and Mountain Time. And for you, it would be in the early evening. We've had Gerard on the show as a host. It's called False Flag Weekly News, No Lies Radio. And I think that the attack against me has a lot to do with the things that Kevin and I have been talking about on False Flag Weekly News.
I think there's no doubt about that. I really enjoyed having you on, Tony. Thanks for giving us so much of your time. I really appreciate that. Stay in touch with us. You're welcome to come back. And I wish you all the very best with that issue, with your issue with the university. Thanks again, Tony.
Thanks, Richie Allen.
Bye for now. Great to have you on the programme. Tony Hall on the line to us there from Lethbridge in Canada. Very quick break. Back in a minute.
Virtually every transaction that involves a child is valuable to somebody.
We intend to show everyone the real reason children are being removed at an alarming rate.
No, this is awful.
The baby's not been seen by the dots or nothing.
They are psychopathic.
They have got the legal right to kill children now, because that's what they're doing.
Traffic 2. Available now at premillionpictures.co.uk.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do not invest another pound of your money until you've heard this message. Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my new best-selling book. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk for full details. Inside, I reveal why gold could soar to $10,000 an ounce and how to make sure you own enough of the right type of gold. To get your copy dispatched today, go to newcaseforgold.co.uk now. This book will change everything you think you know about investing in gold. Visit newcaseforgold.co.uk today.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Richie Allen.
Welcome back. It's 5.5 minutes to the top of the hour. That's about it for the program today, this Wednesday, April 5th, 2017. Thank you so much for listening to it. I really appreciate the fact that you do. Just a quick update on the Google YouTube thing. Monetization over the last 10 days has basically disappeared. We're not earning effectively with Google and YouTube. I've been telling you about this every second or every third day for the last week or so. It's a bit of a disaster. I don't know if it's going to improve. I'm not very optimistic about that. So that's just to update you. I've been asked to tell you, and I have told you. We're earning less now than £10 per day with Google and YouTube. It used to be more than that. But that's the way it goes. Look, we're out of time, more or less. Big thanks to Simon Stewart for looking after the channel and everything else, and Aaron Calland. The programme was produced, edited and introduced by me, Richie Allen. Thanks to my guests today, to George Galloway and to Professor Tony Hall. If you missed any of it, the podcast will be online real soon. In about, I reckon, 15 minutes' time, the podcast will be online. Simon will have the interviews on YouTube tomorrow. Among the guests then tomorrow, as I did mention earlier on, I'll be speaking with, excuse me, just bringing it up there, because I've not written it down. I'm terrible. Yes, I'll be speaking with Callie Blackwell. Callie is the author of a brand new book, which in fact is released tomorrow, The Boy in 7 Billion. That's The Boy in 7 Billion. She's among the guests tomorrow. Until then, look after yourselves and one another. I've been Richie Allen. Bye for now. Bye now. Leaving you with the Spin Doctors. Just go ahead.